am now offering consultation services through Faithfully Engaged. If you're struggling finding a church, dealing with a destructive habit such as pornography, trying to find a way to homeschool your kids but don't know where to start, come check me out. Go to faithfullyengaged.com/consulting to learn more information and to see how we can get started. Well, welcome back, everyone, to another episode of Faithfully Engaged. I'm really excited to have Robert J. Hunt on today. We're going to talk about all things accountability, and that's something as Christians especially, we really need to be accountable for our own actions, for our own life. And I am really excited, Robert, to talk with you. So, yeah, why don't you tell the audience a little bit about yourself?
Thank you. Thank you for having me on the show. I live in the North Texas area in north of Dallas. I've been married to my beautiful wife, Kathy, for 25 years. Ooh, 26 years next week. I didn't forget that. That's good. We have two adult children. Lauren lives in Austin with her husband, Dylan, and James is finishing up college here in the Dallas area at UT Dallas. For a living, I run peer groups. I run groups for business owners to come together each month and work on the challenges that keep us from being our best and running our businesses and living the life that we want. And I get to facilitate all that. It gives me a lot of joy living out my purpose through my career. I wrote a book called Nobody Cares Until You Do back in 22. And the principle of the book is about accountability and the freedom that's found in accountability. And I don't think people think of accountability and equate the word freedom when they think about that. And so that's kind of my quest right now. And that's why I wanted to come on your show, is to challenge people to look at accountability in a different light, because it's freedom.
Let's start right there, actually. I think the way that you were describing that, accountability as freedom, and you're right, that's typically not what we think of. We're like, oh, well, that's just a bunch of rule setting and strict, and that doesn't sound like any fun. And we don't associate that with freedom. So what about accountability makes us have more freedom?
Yeah, the cool part about accountability, in the simplest terms, accountability means you own it. That's what it means. That's accountability. And so if you own it, that means since I own it, I can do whatever I want with it. What happens is when we look at our lives, a lot of times we feel like we're a victim. And so when we have the victim mentality, we blame, we make excuses, or we say we can't do something and we feel like a prisoner, or we just wait and hope that somehow God shows up and fixes all of our problems. And I know that there's wisdom in waiting upon the Lord, and there's a time for that, but God can't steer a ship that isn't moving. And we have a responsibility to go be actively waiting for God's best, not sitting around waiting for him to do the work for us, but to be doing things while he directs, fine tunes, blesses, challenges, pulls us back, all that good stuff. So in my mind, in articulating this concept of accountability, when you truly own everything, you have the power to change anything. And so with that in mind, as a leader, as a husband, a wife, as a business owner, whatever role you play, you can either play the role of a victim, or you can play the role of someone who owns everything and is choosing to do something about it. And to me, that's the freedom that comes with accountability. And that also leads to a better outcome, which gives us more joy and more peace. So that's why I call it freedom.
I think that's a really refreshing perspective on this. This is something that in my day job as a licensed counselor, I talk about victimhood and things like that all the time with people that I work with. And something that I've shared, and I kind of stole this from a counselor friend of mine, that you are not always, it's not always your fault for whatever you're dealing with, for whatever issues that you have in life. Maybe you had a rough childhood or whatever it may be, but you are responsible for it. You're responsible. Even if it's not your fault that you had something dumped on your lap, you're responsible for how you deal with it. And that involves accountability. If I want to be a victim, then I'm not accountable, I guess. I'm telling myself I'm not accountable. But that's not freedom. Being a victim is actually a pretty trapping and damaging role to have in your life.
And I don't take light that the fact that there are people who have been victimized. I grew up in a very abusive home with a father who was very angry. And I watched him beat my mom and beat us many times growing up as a young man. And so I could have grown up and beat my kids if I wanted to, because that was the model I had to follow. But I knew that was wrong. And I didn't grow up to be that way. I made a choice. So even though you may be victimized in a situation, it doesn't mean you have to stay a victim. We all know that life is 10% of what happens to you and 90% of how you respond to it. So if you lose your job, that's a bummer. But life's not over. I spoke at a conference yesterday of people who are unemployed. It's a monthly gathering out here in Texas. A couple hundred people there. And they're just there to encourage each other. And I asked them the question, are you living the life you really want? Which is the premise we make in the book. Are you living the life you want? We want to know, are you? And if you're not, why? And they looked at me like, what are you, crazy? We all are out of a job. How could we be living the life that we really want? Well, you could still live the life you want while you're out of a job. You know, because not everything goes the way we want, but you still get to decide how you respond to it. Because here's what's going to happen. When you get the job, you're going to go in, you're going to just dive into it. You're going to work a ton of hours. You're going to work late. You're going to stay late to look like you're loyal. And you're going to work really hard. And you're going to bring work home. You think about it all the time. And you're going to worry, I hope I keep this job. I hope I don't screw it up. And you'll put it on, and you'll miss things at home. And you won't go to the kids' game. And you'll do all these things. And that's not living the life you want, but you have the job. And so either way in life, good or bad, up or down, you get to decide, am I going to live the life I want in light of all the junk that comes my way? I still get to decide what my life looks like in response to all the stuff, good or bad. And that's, again, that's accountability. That's power and freedom that you decide what your life looks like.
Absolutely. And I'm interested to bring the faith component into this. I know this is something you were talking about off camera, that faith is not its own sphere. Here's my Christianity. Here's my time at church. Here's my job. Here's my family. And it's these all independent spheres. That's not how it's supposed to work. Your faith is in the center of everything. So for Christians especially, when it comes to accountability, what are maybe some struggles you've seen from different Christians as it relates to accountability? And why is it so important specifically for Christians to be accountable?
Well, we are going to be accountable, whether we like it or not. The Bible says at some point you're going to stand before God and he's going to hold us accountable for everything we've done, good or bad, in the days we've been on earth since he redeemed us. We have a future of that. So the question is right now, what would be the reason I'd want to be accountable now? Well, since accountability is freedom and power, and it allows me to live the life I want to be accountable because that's where the good stuff happens. But sadly, a lot of people who are following Christ have forgotten you've already been forgiven of your sins. You already have the Spirit of God that lives inside of you. He has given you a plan for your life. He's already mapped out all the things he wants you to do. He walks with you and protects you and provides you every day. And if you spend your days whining and bitching and moaning about the fact that you don't have this kind of car or this house or this job, you've lost the focus and you've become one of the people who just stays as a victim because you don't get everything you want. You already got so much. We as Christ followers should be the kindest, most happiest, joyful people out there, but we're not. And especially in the church world, we complain about the music, the temperature, the seats, what things they teach on. We just love to pick at stuff. That's not what Christ came and died for. We have freedom, but not freedom to whine and complain. Freedom to live like Christ did, to serve others, to be in love with God because we get to know him personally, to serve others. We have all that freedom, but we tuck it away and we sit down as a victim and we complain. And that's miserable. It's no fun for you. And it certainly isn't honoring God.
Absolutely. And that last piece there, is it honoring God? And I think that's something, again, as Christians especially, we need to check ourselves because it's not just us that, yeah, we can live in freedom and things like that. Like there's benefit for us, sure. But it goes beyond us. And it's, I'm not just kind of dishonoring myself. I'm dishonoring God. And that has a lot of weight. We should be able to look at that and say, wow, I am wrong. I get on my knees. I confess my sins. And I don't think most of us, and I'll include myself in this at times, really think of complaining and being in that victim mindset in that way, that it's dishonoring God.
Well, it's because we're so used to it because everybody does it that, you know, we don't think about it as so bad. Think about it, about the things you're missing out. I know that I've seen in my life, obedience leads to blessings. And so when I'm obedient to what God has for me, he goes, good, your mind's in the right place. Let me have you do this. Let me give you this. Let me have that. And we do it with our kids. If they behave, we take them to Disneyland. If they don't behave, you go in time out. I mean, it's just that easy. We want to do nice things for them. But if you're rebelling and disobeying and talking smack to your mom, we're not going to Disneyland. So we lose out on the blessings that God would want to give us when our behavior is bad. But there's also this opportunity to really, again, see the power and the freedom to live the life you really want. Why would you want to be a victim of your own life? You get to do whatever you want. Go chase whatever you want. Especially if we're in the zone of where God is doing something in our lives and we want to please him, God will bring so many things to us that are amazing. When we're in the zone with him and we're walking with him and we're looking for him, what do you want to do? How do I use my life, my resources, my friendship, my job to honor you? He'll bring stuff like crazy because he sees, okay, you're ready now. Let's do this. But if we just sit back and complain and wait for him to show up and fix our stuff, he's not going to do that for us. He wants us to be the people who go out and sow the fields and reap the harvest and care for our neighbors and the world around us. That's on us to do. And I think we're missing the opportunity just because we're used to complaining.
I want to go back to your book, actually, the book title, Nobody Cares Until You Do. I think that's a brilliant title. Why is that? Why is it that nobody cares until we do?
Yeah, that's the turning point in the whole concept of accountability. We tell them in the book our story about that my wife and I were $90,000 in debt at one point, and that doesn't include the house and the cars. And we were, in 2019, straddled with all this debt and just miserable. And I remember at one point, just at January of that year, we were working through our plans for the year. We were whiteboarding all the things we wanted. And it came down to this reality is, hey, what we really want to do is please the Lord. That's really what we wanted in our hearts. Well, why weren't we? We weren't because we were mad at God for not giving us enough money to fix our mistakes. And so we blamed God for not making my business grow at the rate that it could so that I could use all the profit to pay off my debt. But God's like, dude, I already gave you all this money. What'd you do with it? Why would I give you more money? You're clearly not responsible. And so in that moment of blame and anger and frustration, we realized, you know, the reason we're miserable is us. And we've chosen to look at life and complain instead of being thankful. And so you have to do things to change your life so where you can be thankful, to where you can walk in obedience. And the solution in our mind was to sell our house, take the equity out of it, and pay off all our debt. And that's the path we went on. And it was hard and it was frustrating and there was a lot of emotion. But we wanted to do the things that freed us up to be able to be thankful to God for the life he's already given us. And so when you get to the place in your life where you go, look, wait, nobody cares. Nobody cares if I'm fat, broke, miserable in my marriage, unhappy with my kids, unhappy with my job. Nobody cares unless you care enough to do something about it. And then when you care enough to do something about it, then there's a whole world of people that will rally around you and friends who want to support you in this journey as you own your journey and you do something about it. That's the turning point. That's why we call it Nobody Cares.
I love the way that you walk that out, and even the personal story there. It kind of reminds me of something that's going around in the let's say the news, I guess, kind of in pop culture here recently. Are you familiar? Certainly don't listen to it myself, but are you familiar with the musical artist Lizzo?
No.
Okay, so probably for the best that you're not the best.
I listen a lot of 80s musical. Unless that's 80s.
Yeah, no, this is for the best that you don't know this. But just somebody that is, as far as I know, very talented musically, but became well known for her weight being very large, and not in the sense of like, just, oh, she's a singer that is large. She is the large singer. That's kind of her persona, who she is, very much in the like fat acceptance type of movement and everything. Okay. Well, you know, lots of pushback from people like, hey, this is very unhealthy. We shouldn't be celebrating this. And she's kind of taking a break. She's not really doing a lot of different musical things like that. She's kind of out of the limelight. Well, out of nowhere, about a month ago, she started showing pictures of her in the gym, has lost considerable amount of weight. And all of a sudden you've get these people, she's pretty outspoken, like leftist and beliefs and stuff. You get all of these right wing people praising her, left, right, and center, all over the place, because she's doing something. She's accountable to this point, and she's looking great. She's getting healthy, and people are cheering her on because she's being accountable. And I think that fits that example there perfectly.
Yeah, there's all kinds of things we could look at it as. I'm not really a fan of social media because we aren't playing an even playing field, and the world is broken. And so how it works is that people who don't believe what I believe as a Christ follower can say all kinds of horrible things. But if I turn around and say things that are contrarian to that, then I'm the racist, bigot, hating person. Since I know it doesn't work fairly, I'm just being quiet. And frankly, no one really cares what I think anyway. So rather than get on Facebook and complain that she's given a bad example for fat people, or on the other hand, now being a fair weather fan and going, yes, you're doing great. I think if we just were busy taking care of our lives, when's the last time you walked next door and asked the neighbor how they're doing? There's got to be a dozen old people on my street who during this earlier part of this year, my wife, my beautiful wife, Kathy, had the opportunity to help one of our neighbors go to hospice care and all these medical treatments until she went to be with the Lord. And she could devote the time to care for that lady. But if we had never reached out and met our neighbors, she would have died alone in her house. And there's a whole neighborhood of people that you don't know as you sit there on your Facebook page or your Instagram, burning hours, doing stuff. You know, get out in the world and find people and just care for people. Just ask how they're doing and help them. You don't need to be agreeing with them politically or faith-wise. You just need to care for people. God is going to do what God is going to do. And if we were the most caring, serving, nurturing group of people in the world, we would have a whole different view on how Christians are viewed in the world. Like they were in the earlier days when the Romans were murdering people and the Christians helped them and the Christians were stepping up to help. Now there's lots of bad times too, but the point is that you and I could make a difference in the world today. And we get caught up in all these little things that are just bizarre social distortions. Let's just care for people. Let's own the place where God put you in the journey at the work with the neighbors, with the friends. Let's just be there. Let's be a great example there. That could keep you very busy.
I think that's another great point there too of what another thing that I deal with often with clients that come to me is as purpose. What is my purpose? I don't feel I have any purpose in the world. And of course, if I feel that way, yeah, you're going to be depressed. I don't have a purpose. Why should I be here? If we take that to its logical conclusion, it gets dangerous. There is a world full of purpose out there. If you look for it, if I'm just going to be, well, I don't have this car, or I don't have this nice house, or whatever it may be. I didn't get as many likes on this comment as this person did. You're going to feel bad, but there is all sorts of purpose out there, but I got to look for it. It's not going to find me just in my phone.
I mean, at the very core of the what we share as a common purpose is to glorify the Lord here on earth so that people come to know him and accept his free gift of salvation. A tear down for that is the place he's put you. If you're married, love your spouse really well and serve that person. If you got kids, raise them up to know the Lord and to be good citizens. And where you live, get to know your neighbors. This is our monthly Friday gathering, and we have neighbors come to our house that we invite them over and we feed them. And we just hang out and have food for a couple hours and then they go home. But we're getting to have an influence here in this neighborhood because of this house we live in. So there's all kinds of things you could be doing without really having already identified your particular specific purpose in life. My personal purpose is to help people remove obstacles that keep them from being their best. I've written it down years ago. I took a job that allows me to do that, so every day is awesome. And I make decisions in my life of figuring out ways where I can use my purpose better. But until you identify your personal purpose, there's still a lot of purpose out there that's very clear that God has led you somewhere where you can be a light, care for people, help people, look out for people. That could keep us very busy.
Absolutely. And just bringing in the parenting side of things. I know a lot of the audience is kind of where I'm at in life. I've got 3 young kiddos and, you know, pretty busy with soccer practice and chasing the kids around the house and all that fun stuff. That when it comes to accountability, yes, I'm accountable for my own actions. Yes. But I have a lot more accountability than just myself. I can't just tell my 1-year-old to go figure it out. Like I'm accountable for him. He's got to depend on me and his mom to be able to be able to live. So for parents, especially of young children, but really parents in general, how can we be accountable, not just for our own individual lives, but accountable for our kids, accountable for our whole family?
Yeah. One of our premises is that no one can hold anyone else accountable. You can only hold yourself accountable. Now you can teach your kids to be responsible, which is different than accountable. Responsible is you make your bed every day. You take out the trash. You go to school. You turn off the light. There's responsibilities. But accountable is that you own the process. You own the, why do we turn off the light? Well, because we're taking care of our home. So taking care of our home is also picking up trash and not eating food over the bed where it stains it and not throwing things here. You know, there's a whole process of what we're contributing towards for the end result. So you can't make your kids be anybody. You can teach them things and you can guide them, but they make their own decisions. Even as a young child, you spend an awful lot of time trying to correct them, but they're going to be who they're going to be. And so that's where we model it through the life we live, where we show accountability, where we model it for our kids to embrace a lifestyle of accountability, where we don't blame, make excuses, or whine about things, where we don't just sit around and hope it gets better. We own it and we do something about it. Mm-hmm. And I think that's how we're going to teach a next generation of kids of the freedom and power of accountability is a good thing by watching us do it, by watching us live it out.
Absolutely. I share often on the podcast and personal life alike that by no means am I some perfect being. All of us are fallen. If we were perfect beings, we wouldn't need Christ. And that's obviously not true. Something my wife and I really try to help show our kids is by apologizing when we're wrong.
Yeah.
If there's just an instance this last week, my daughter was misbehaving and I let her know you were misbehaving. That was wrong. But I overreacted. I shouldn't have raised my voice. And that apology there, owning my part, it took a tense situation. And all of a sudden, now we're hugging. And guess what? We're moved on. You talk about that freedom. We were good to go at that point because she owned her part. I owned my part. And we were able move on. As parents, especially, if we go in there, I'm the dictator. And everything, I'm perfect. You just follow everything I do perfectly. It doesn't mesh that well because we're not perfect beings, even as parents.
No. And it's a long journey. You know, we're going to spend our whole life trying not to suck too bad before we get to stand before God. And he's going to make us perfect beings created in his own image without the hesitation and limits of this current world. But I guess if we model grace, if we model humility, we get the opportunity to get some of that back. The Bible says you reap what you sow. I think we forget that you are creating what comes back at you. And if you are patient and kind and full of grace and mercy, you will get those things back. If you plant a tomato seed, you don't get a banana growing on it. You get a tomato. And so God created nature that reflects his word. And his word shows if I put this in the ground, I get this back. So if I am planting kindness and grace and mercy and humility in the world around me, I'm going to get kindness and grace and mercy back. Not from everyone, because not everyone is doing the same thing. They're not planting, but we overall will see the response back to the way we live.
Yeah, absolutely. When we're looking at, all right, I know I need to be accountable. I see my problems. But maybe somebody's spinning their wheels like, okay, I recognize it, but now what? I'm so lost. I don't even know where to get started. How do you encourage people all right, to take that next step, to actually do something. I recognize it, but now I need to do something. How do you recommend people to just get started with accountability?
Yeah, I wonder what the, back to the first part is, how do they recognize it, that there's an accountability there? There's something going wrong, probably. There's something that is out of whack, and they're seeing, this is my deal, I got to deal with it. A lot of times we're not aware of the level of accountability until it becomes thrown at us and we're really, oh, this is mine. Well, the first thing you do is blame. If that doesn't work, you make excuses. If that doesn't work, you say you can't. I can't do anything about that. Or you just wait and hope it gets better. But when you get to that place in your life where you say, nobody cares, unless I do, unless I own this, I got to do this, I got to own this. Then the first thing you do is you just look at reality. What is reality? In our case, reality was we owned a house and we had $90,000 in debt. And my business was never going to pay off that debt, as I'd seen for years, as it just got worse and worse in debt. And so we thought, this is an option. It wasn't a great one. We didn't like it. We liked our house. Giving up our home was hard, but it was an option that made sense to us for the journey we had taken on. And so you acknowledge reality. And the next step is you embrace the suck. I mean, it might suck to go through some hard times. People say, oh, I can't do that. Yeah, you can. Yeah, you can. People say, I can't live without this kind of salary. Yeah, you can. Just wait till you get laid off from your job and you're not getting any money and you realize how much you can get by on. And yeah. And to me, again, this is where freedom comes in play. If I look at my life and I say, I want a life that looks like this, then just adjust everything you do to live your life like that. If some guy wants to be a potter and he's going to make cool pottery and he might sell a couple vases a month, but he loves what he does, he has to live in a way that allows him to just sell two pottery things a month. Now, if you have a car and cable and a house and all this stuff, and now you have to panic that you have to fulfill some financial obligation you created out of your own need or want, and then you don't have a life that supports that, that's your choice. You chose that. People will make bad decisions and then be angry at the world that they can't afford it. They can't get by. But you're not willing to adjust your lifestyle. We still have one car. We don't own a home. We rent. And we're thankful to have a house to live in that we rent. And we have one car. And we get by. And when we have to do something else, I take an Uber. And it's fine. It works. And I have money. I could buy a car right now. But I'm trying to rebuild all those things I lost when I was $90,000 in debt and how I drained all my savings in my retirement. I'm 61. I can't roll forever. I got to start thinking ahead. So we're making decisions that are responsible and we're doing the right thing. So you acknowledge reality, you embrace the suck, you find a solution, and you make it happen. And those are the parts of the book. We outline this in the book to teach you where you're playing a victim, how to get that turning point, and then how to have plans to go forward and live the life you really want. It works. It's very prescriptive. It makes sense. And that's why I want to help people understand that there's freedom and accountability, because you get to create the life you really want. And you get to design that.
I think that part that you're describing, the embrace the suck stage, is the one where people just get bent up on it. We might try to overthink it and try to maybe get around that. Well, how do I avoid that part? We can't. It's part of it. It's
supposed to suck. I mean, life is supposed to be a bummer anyway, right? Didn't Jesus say, in this world you will have trouble, but take heart, I overcame the world. We forget that part. We just want that happiness, easy, go lucky life. It's not supposed to be that way.
Yeah.
We're supposed to pick up a cross daily. A cross is a thing of destruction. It's pain. It's horrible. And we want to just have an easy life. It's not supposed to be easy. It's supposed to be hard. So just gear up for a hard life. And then when it's not, you can have fun and make it a light day because nothing went wrong. But in life, you're going to have trouble. So take heart, but you can overcome it because he overcame it already. We just need to get dialed into that reality check so we don't end up complaining so much about a journey that we're all supposed to be on.
Absolutely. And that's the part of our faith that should give us that confidence that this sucks. I don't like being in this. But I trust you, God. I trust you have this plan for me. I know you're good. That's the beauty of this. That's what helps us persevere. And I think to your point, as Christians, we look at the blessing part. And yeah, we have some blessings and that's great. But that perseverance through the struggles, because we're not just doing it on our own. We have God. We lose that, and we lose the significance of what God really is, of who he is, when we are just going great in life all the time. Those struggles really bring to light how important it is.
Well, and don't forget, we're missionaries on earth. When you've been redeemed by Christ, you are now part of that family. Your home is heaven. And you're supposed to live here and do the work of the Lord until you go back to be with him, till you return from your missionary journey. And so here on this planet, if you are a missionary, you say, let's go to Africa. Let's go to Africa for a year and go live there. You live in a hut. You wouldn't be like, oh, it's really hot in here. You got air conditioning? It's a hut. And there's bugs in here. Yeah, there's bugs. It's Africa. And you would just, you would gear up and go there and be excited because you're doing the work of the Lord. And you'd be there with joy, and you'd work hard, and you'd learn the language, and you'd go do the things they do because you're there. This is how it should be for us here. But we're so focused on trying to make a buck or have a next better vacation or just do stuff that doesn't do jack for God's kingdom. And then we get distracted by that, so that when life is frustrating or challenging and we don't get what we want, you forget you're on the mission field. Go eat a bug and sleep in the dirt tonight and you know, dance with the natives and do all this stuff that you would do if you're a missionary, because you're supposed to do it here. I think that's an attitude we've lost.
Mm. Yeah, I absolutely agree. And that's something we've got to keep in mind. It goes beyond our life here, goes beyond just us having a great time. There's much more to it. And we are called to spread the gospel and share it to that neighbor, like we're talking about, to your neighbors, to the person in Africa, across the world, and in between there. That is our call.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of workplace ministry. It has its own title now. But the reality is, you go to work 5 or 6 days a week and bring your faith with you. Be who you are on Sunday, Monday through Saturday, because God gave you eternal life, and he gave you the power of God and the Spirit of God so that others can come know him, so that you can glorify his name. So go to work. Let that be part of your mission field. Be a light at work based on the hope that is inside of you and the faith that you have. Let that be part of who you are. Don't tuck that away. Someone asked me the other day, how do you bring your faith to work? I said, how do you turn it off? How do you leave it at home? What does that look like? I mean, you don't go to work and forget you got a wife and kids. So when your phone rings, it's your wife's number. You're like, who's that? I don't know who that is. Just put that away. That's your wife. Answer the phone. Why would you tuck away your faith any more than you tuck away the fact you've got a wife and kids? It doesn't make sense. You can go to work and talk about how about the Cowboys won a game, or you can talk about whether or not the weather's bad or this movie you saw. Why are you suppressing something that is so core to you, or that you say is so core to you? Maybe it's really not. Maybe it's really not important to you, and you just go to church on a Sunday to punch the clock. But if you really are enjoying your faith, how would you not talk about it? How would you not talk about what God's doing in your life and the blessings that you've seen and the things you see him do in your life and the joy and the peace? How would you not talk about that?
It's an excellent point, and one that, yeah, we need that to be not just a sphere of life. It's not just Sunday. It is my life. It is who I am. And more importantly, who saved me. And I want to tell other people about that.
Yeah.
Robert, just a fantastic discussion here about accountability. And I'm certain that listeners to the show today are interested in the book, interested in just more about you and the work that you do. What information can you give to the listeners here to check out the book and maybe be in contact with you after the show?
Yeah, you know, we want to change people's lives. So if you want to buy the book, you can go to nobodycaresbook.com and you can order a book from us there. And if you don't want to buy a book, you can take the satisfaction assessment online for free. We don't ask for your information. We don't know anything about you. It's your private information. But when you take this assessment and you declare to yourself, this is where I'm not satisfied, then you have to answer why. And then the question is, what are you going to do about it? And then you see the blame excuse and the wait and hope and all those things pop up. But it gives you a chance to declare to yourself where you're not satisfied. You can have that for free. But if you take the book and you read it and you apply it, I guarantee you can own the journey you're on and change it for the better. We model it in our own life. We're still modeling it today. And so we'd love to have you go and learn about the book. Watch some videos on that on our website that tell you more stories about the book. That's nobodycaresbook.com. And for your podcast, I created a unique URL, nobodycarespod.com. And if you go there and you fill out a contact form and you use the code word fully engaged, I will mail you a copy of my book for free because I want you to be able to have it. If you really want to read it and you really want to change your life, I'll give you a copy of the book for free for the first two people who fill out that contact form. Put your address in there and I'll mail you a copy of the book. And then you can email me and tell me how it's going and share with me your journey. I'd love to hear about it.
Fantastic. And I'll include all of that information down in the description link below so you guys can check that out. Robert, again, thanks so much for the wonderful conversation about accountability.
Thanks for having me on your show.
All right. And thank you to everybody that tuned in today, and we'll catch you on the next episode.